Every family, I think, has a half a dozen or so of what I might call constitutive stories. These are the things that, that create a kind of family identity. And something will happen, and oh, somebody will tell the story that we all know, and it just is carried, in a sense, by the punchline. That's all you have to say is the punchline of the story, and all the memories come back, and all the people come back, and so on. And in our family, Jeannie's Aunt Virginia's father, long rest his soul, is the subject of one of these constitutive stories. And he had a wife who loved him dearly, and a little bald spot just like that right there. And every once in a while, as a gesture of affection, she would say to him, "Here's a little something special for you, Walter." And it would be maybe some extra dessert she'd made or some little thing she'd bought. Or on Thanksgiving, I guess, he was especially fond of what we might euphemistically call the part that went over the fence last. "Here's a little something special for you, Walter." And she'd kiss his little bald spot. And it's just one of those sweet little stories about people who are loved and love. I think if Jesus' family had a constitutive story about sort of the personality of who Jesus was, I'm going to refer to what might be the text of this sermon, but isn't quite. The text comes later, and we'll get to it. The story of the wedding at Cana. It's his first miracle, as it were. And it's a parlor trick, is essentially what it is. And there's this big party, apparently a wedding of some very well-to-do people, who invited all kinds of people, and maybe some they didn't expect, and the wine ran out. In other words, they drank it up. We're having a good time. And somebody says to Jesus, "Oh, we're out of wine." And he kind of says, "What do you want me to do about it? Watch this." And suddenly, and you know, this story does serious damage to the idea that alcohol use is sinful, because he suddenly generates mass quantities of more wine. And it's even better than the other stuff. The Bible makes a point that not only, usually we save the good wine till later, or, you know, we serve the good wine first, because after people have finished the wine, who cares how good it is, right? In other words, a little something special seems to be part of the message that occurs right at the outset of Jesus' ministry. Not only can he do these wonderful things, or even these silly little pick a card, any card kind of stuff, but there's generally a little something special for you, Walter. Right? It's not hard to figure out what these things are. Mozart called them grace notes, playing along, and suddenly there's this little one in there, you know, and the sunrise over the Cap Rock every day. A little something special. The dust in the air, the breeze, a laughing child. The thing you go to one restaurant for twice a year just to get that, and it doesn't matter what the price is. A little something special for you. And we experience these things routinely and regularly for a reason. And we ought to probably pay more attention to them than we do, like the sunrise or the sunset, because they become little sources of energy that we need when things go south. And they certainly do go south. We're in the midst of a mess today. That little something special sometimes is unexpected turmoil or even disaster. Well, what happens then? I've been watching this happen for roughly 40 years of professional ministry. And what happens is we become together who we most are constituted to be, and that is one body. We circle the wagons when anyone is in trouble, really. I mean, that's why we watch the news. We pay attention. And sometimes, if nothing else, we bring to God in prayer those concerns about people we don't know, people that live in, well, at the moment, France, Turkey, etc. So we're paying attention and we're watching. Kind of an encircling of care. When it happens to people we know, well, we circle the wagons sometimes quite profoundly with our presence, with our food, with our prayers. And we let them know that we're around you. And sometimes that something special happens to us. Sometimes we're not the ones just paying attention or the ones deeply involved. Sometimes it's our wagon that's on fire. And Janie's wagon's on fire today. And in ways that are more profoundly known in our family these days, we've experienced that too this year. And we have learned what it feels like to have a circle of care and love, just as we've learned what it's like to be in that circle. And we've learned that even people on the periphery of our lives are paying attention. And my point is, this is how it works. This is the circling of the wagons, the sort of concentric circles around a burning wagon, is also one of the something special things that God gives us as he infuses our lives with his Spirit. I could end it there, because that's our experience. But as we read the New Testament, that reality and all that energy takes us from the peace and comfort and hope that we get into a mission, into a calling. And it's fun to read the New Testament when we're reading about the parlor tricks, you know, and the baby in the manger, and healing this. But there's also a message in the New Testament that, especially today in our world, the world most badly needs to hear, and I suspect is most resistant to its message. And that is where Jesus says on the Sermon on the Mount, and this is the text for this sermon, "You have heard that it was said, love thy neighbor. But I say unto you, love your enemies, and pray for those who persecute you." We need to hear it most, and we want to hear it less right now. And the reason I think we want to hear it less is because we have been witness to an illusion about our enemies, that there are rigidly bounded camps of opposite ideologies and behavior. Red state, blue state, for lack of a better way to say it. Christian Muslim. Black Lives Matter, Tea Party. And we have been witness to an illusion that these are mutually exclusive categories, and they're not. They're concentric circles, just like the kinds of concentric circles that circle our wagons when they're on fire. And sort of collectively, our whole wagon is on fire right now, with the tension and turmoil and anger that are defining our world. But I want to bring it together in a way that has a human face. And one of the two human faces that we're tempted to create mutually exclusive categories about was in the news this week. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg talked. Probably she shouldn't have. But she represents an ideological pole or a mutually exclusive category, the opposite of which might be now, I think sadly, the late Justice Antonin Scalia. And just as we have red state, blue state, and all those other dichotomies, Ginsburg-Scalia represent the illusion of mutual exclusivity. One of the things we learned first when the late Justice Scalia died was how deep and abiding was his friendship with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They celebrated New Year's together when Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband died, when her wagon caught fire. Justice Scalia was among the first there to weep and to share. I think that represents the secret behind the illusion. I think all of us are much more like that facet of that polarity than the polarity, because we all have what I think Jesus left for us, or even created for us as his body, and that is heart. And that is heart. I am completely and irretrievably convinced that everyone in this room, if they thought for a minute about an ideological enemy and learned that that person's wagon was on fire and you had a fire hose that would help, you would go without even question. You wouldn't even think about it. Because the human reality of shared drama and trauma transcends anything that would divide us. We would go immediately if we knew somebody. And I think we're capable, more than we think, of listening and acting on Jesus' directive. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Because we would do that. What's implied, however, is also what I think is possible. And that is, let's imagine the energy it would take to run to our enemy's burning wagon and help, and dial that back by 90%. Just take 10% of that energy and use it to frame the ideology of the enemy, even when their wagon isn't on fire. In other words, to hold on to at least 10% of heart. I think if everybody did that today, that would be something special.